subscribe to the Hit That Line Podcast Network.
This podcast is powered by the pros at Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric. Arkansas owned, Arkansas operated. GoPascal.com.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
I'm always high on the hogs, guys. I'm high. Well, I'm not high right now, but my day is young.
My odometer's way up there. I'm that 2018 that's already got 130,000 miles on it.
The Razorbacks rush across the field to get that boot.
Tommy, Chuck, and Ty, you guys are the gold standards of sports talk radio.
He bleeds to Arkansas.
Ty's got good hair.
So Jerry West was a very unique individual. It's not seen often, a guy to excel on both the playing and the executive side of things, but he was also known for saying stuff like this.
Competitive people, the word dogs comes up a lot. That guy's a dog. That guy, well, I was a wolf. I used to eat dogs.
Dogs. Again, the Los Angeles Lakers icon not only had success there, Golden State, Clippers, Memphis. Chuck, I'm going to be honest, I didn't get a chance to watch those great Knicks teams and his teams battle in the early 70s, but I know I say a lot of our listeners, but some of our listeners, including you, probably remember how incredible those series were between the Knicks and the Lakers back in the day.
You know, Jerry West, I was... in the early 70s, I was born in 63, I'll just put it that way. So the early 70s was kind of at the tail end of Jerry West's career. His glory years were in the 60s, and it was a little bit before my time. But I do remember, Jerry West and Gail Goodrich and Wilt Chamberlain and Happy Hairston and Kazzy Russell. And, I mean, those were some storied Laker teams. And, I mean, he's the logo, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm. Jim King's another name that's got Fort Smith roots, played at Northside that played with Jerry West. And I know, we don't have Clay on today, but he recently spoke to Gail Goodrich about John Calipari. And there's another connection, you can go read that column on hitthatline.com. But I was thinking yesterday, about Jim King and that Fort Smith tie, that kind of brings it back home a little bit.
Yeah, you're right about that. I mean, that's exactly right. And I know Clay and, as you said, I guess they've had a conversation and done a story. Jerry West was, for a certain generation, I mean, he was basketball.
Tommy used the phrase personified earlier, not just basketball, but class. I think it's sometimes very difficult to reach a generation or two generations or three generations behind him, but he managed to do that for at least 30 plus years on the executive front.
Well, he's the logo.
Yeah.
He's the logo. And that demands and commands respect from everyone who's ever played in that league. It's a fraternity that, frankly, we cannot understand because we've not been part of it. But he is the logo. He's the chairman of the board. He is Frank Sinatra. He's the guy. And all those players, I mean, he's the OG. They give him their respect. And you've seen that universally across the game.
Let's talk to Sterling, who's on the McCarty Dino Hotline. He has a thought on Jerry West this morning. Welcome in, Sterling.
Guys, and Chuck said it best, and I think that part needs to be emphasized to the younger generation, how good a player he was. He's an Upper Room Hall of Famer. He's a Mount Olympus Hall of Famer. At the time of his retirement, he was number three all-time in scoring. Before Jordan and Magic came on, the all-time backcourt was Oscar and Jerry. And for my money, and I didn't see him play, everybody knows my age, but I read articles, I read the articles that wrote at the time, stuff that wrote about him all through time, and I've seen his stats. In those game sevens, he was scoring 35, 40, had a triple double that 69 game seven. I think it was 42, 13, 12. I might be off on that assistant rebound, but it was around that range. But the point being, he's, for my money, he's the third greatest two guard of all time behind Michael and Kobe. Hey, some old times would tell you that he may be better than Kobe. Don't give me Dwayne Wade. Don't give me all these other two guards. It's those three guys, the top two guards all the time. I think that needs to be emphasized to the younger crowd of how good a player he was. Everybody knows. I love Winning Time as a show for entertainment.
Yeah.
But the depiction of Jerry West was over the top. Now, he was intense, and I'm sure some of that stuff was, I think it had to be overblown when you see how his demeanor was. I know you got other callers, other topics, and other things to do today, so I'm going to get off. I know I go long, but a Mount Olympus Hall of Famer. He's an all-timer. He's not just great. He's up there at the upper echelon of all-time great.
Yeah.
Y'all have a great day.
And obviously, when you look at points and what one of first of three player or third amongst players to get 25,000 and all these stats, Chucky did it in an era where the three-point line wasn't there in his playing day either. You know, that should be pointed out when you compare it to, you know, I don't know if you call it the modern era of basketball, but certainly the days where the three-point line was out there.
You're right, and he probably would have had a lot more points had there been a three-point line in that era. And you can say that about Jerry West, and you can say that about a lot of guys. I think it was his toughness as a player that earned him generational respect. Players respect tough players. That's one thing I've learned from observing. Players, they may appreciate the game of a great player, but they respect the tough player. And Jerry West was a combination of toughness and grace on the floor. I mean, if you're old enough to remember, I mean, I'll just put it like this. He made moves you don't see a lot of white guys make. And, I mean, he could play the game. And he just he garnered respect among everyone who ever hit the hardwood. And that's why you hear players like Charles Barkley. I mean, look, I've watched Charles Barkley play, and I watched Jerry West play. You won't find two players in the history of basketball whose games were more different than Jerry West and Charles Barkley. But yet there was a respect because there was a toughness, and they knew what was involved in getting there and, moreover, what was involved in staying there. Now, look, Jerry West was an okay executive. He was not a Hall of Fame executive. He was a Hall of Fame player. I didn't watch the show. I didn't watch the Winning Time show. I know if he didn't file a lawsuit, he threatened to file a lawsuit.
Yeah.
I generally don't watch shows like that because there's too many inaccuracies for my taste. But, you know, he was an okay executive. But Sterling's right. In terms of what he meant to the game, in terms of his playing ability, just his persona. I mean, he's on Mount Everest. I mean, you know, I mean, he's there. He's Mount Rushmore, Mount Everest. I mean, he's all of them. And he's at the top of every one of them.
Yeah, and you use the word respect. I mean, if you read the ESPN.com articles, there's quotes from LeBron James and Michael Jordan. I mean, Adam Silver, who you'd expect, you know, certain quotes certain people you expect to read a quote from in a passing of this nature. This one's so beyond that you got Michael Jordan with a quote in there.
He's the logo.
Yeah, I mean.
He's the logo.
One of the things that always stands out to me when someone like says passes a legend, it's like, how do your competitors feel about you? And Sterling brought up Oscar Robinson there, who they were teammates on the 60 Olympic team. They competed in college at Cincinnati and West Virginia. They competed when he was on the Bucks and Jerry was on the Lakers. And not just, again, yesterday or at points, but the things that Oscar would say about him post-playing career was pretty remarkable. That is just something I've always latched to, is like, not your enemies, but what are the guys that you're gunning for to get a championship have to say? And you mentioned the respect and toughness. That's always stands out to me, and Oscar had the best things to say about him, the Big O.
But now, just so we're clear, as great as Jerry West was as a player, Oscar Robertson was better.
Oh, he was a dude, man. I mean, 70 champion. He was he invented the triple double basically for back in the day, way back in the 60s. So, yeah, Oscar Robertson was tremendous. There's no question about that. Yeah. But, yep, Jerry West, at 86 years old, passes away yesterday.
In 2019, when Jerry West was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom, as we know, the the highest civilian honor you can get. Here's a quote from something he said there that I think is really cool. It never ceases to amaze me the places you can go in this world chasing a bouncing ball. I mean, that pretty well sums it up right there, that, you know, what sports meant to him and the life that he started out in West Virginia. And, you know, he spoke about kind of the rough childhood he had. He had an abusive father, as he laid out. And to take all of that in his childhood, he scored 900 points in a high school season out there. First player to ever do it. Led his high school team to a championship. Played his college basketball there. And then to turn it into, you know, 65 years, Chuck, 64-year career in California is pretty amazing.
Remarkable. I mean, just a remarkable story, a remarkable American story. And, I mean, I know I've said it 10 times already, but he was the logo. And that's all you really need to say about him.
All right, so we'll talk more Jerry West when we get. If you've got some thoughts, you're welcome to join us here on the McLarty Daniel Hotline at 877-377-6963. Chuck, we've given our reaction to the schedule. We'll talk about Arkansas's basketball schedule coming up. But in terms of the football schedule, you got a night game against LSU, which I know a lot of people are happy about. You got a couple flex games on the calendar, flex anywhere from 2:30 to 7. You'll be told 6 days before when exactly that time is. And Texas, is it officially an 11 a.m. game, either on ESPN or ABC? I know that people don't love 11 a.m. games, but you're on a marquee television slot, whether it's right after College Game Day or right on ABC. I don't mind the Arkansas, at least the early stages of what looks like to be their schedule this fall.
Well, I mean, it looks fine to me. I've never been one to quibble with schedules much. I mean, it is what it is. You can't do anything about it. They lay it out for you, and other teams have schedules too, and everybody's got some parts of their schedule that you look at and you say, I like that, and then you have parts you look at and you say, I don't like that. So I'm fine with it. I really don't have a strong feeling either way, to be honest about it.
Tommy pointed out something yesterday, and I hadn't thought about it. I was more thinking, hey, this gives fans a chance to plan out, whether staying a night, staying a weekend, or whatever. But from a recruiting standpoint, it's also easier to get in the word or the ears of parents, players, and others. Like, coaches are type A, we know that. And this kind of gives them the early projections. And I would think it would help them on different recruiting visits and just preparations for that specific weekend.
Probably does. Probably makes scheduling easier.
Yeah, and I like the fact that, you know,
I don't know that it's an advantage, but it makes scheduling
easier. Yeah, because it's not like Arkansas.
Yeah,
we're
the only one.
Yeah.
Well, I think it helps you zero in on, you know, I think the Texas game will take care of itself, but it helps you zero in on that maybe harder to schedule out of state recruit for the LSU game and the Tennessee game.
No, I'm in full agreement. Yeah. I think it makes scheduling easier, but I don't know that it's advantageous.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, now all of a sudden you're going to be a top 10 right. recruiting class as a result of this. I just think, you know, you're around these coaches, you know, weekly and during the season daily. They're type A's. They are detail freaks. And having this information for them during their planning part of the year, you know, now's when all these operational people are figuring out the hotels and the meals and the buses. And I think the institutions wanted this as much as fans did, just because they want to get at least some idea of what their plans are going to be.
Well, yeah, I would imagine that's probably got something to do with it. Some of this stuff's overblown. If you're 9-1, doesn't matter what time you play, those recruits are coming. Now, if you're 3-6, suddenly scheduling becomes a big issue. So, I mean, all those things play into it, yes. But, if you win, they'll come visit regardless of the kickoff time.
Yeah, and I just, you know, as we look at the schedule, I'm just excited as I look at the schedule. At times I'm kind of like you. They, you know, we knew there was going to be a game time at some point, but just to see these other matchups like Georgia, Texas, and Tennessee at Oklahoma. And Chuck, I was telling Ty yesterday, I still have to pause a half a beat and remind myself Oklahoma and Tennessee playing is a conference game now. I mean, you see that, and I just, it doesn't just instinctively click like when we see Ole Miss and, you know, Ole Miss and Arkansas or something on the schedule.
No, you're right. I can, you know, just a week or so ago, I mean, I channel surfed on to Texas and Oklahoma playing softball. And you'll watch that for a while, and I'm sitting there thinking the same thing you're thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, these guys are going to be part of the league next year in everything. And so, look, the landscape's going to change. Texas and Oklahoma, I mean, they both bring something to the table. Let's just be candid. They bring more to the table in 2024 than Arkansas and South Carolina brought to the table in 1992. And they bring more to the table than Missouri and Texas A&M did when they were brought into the league. These are a couple of heavyweights. And so, across the board, it's going to change the landscape in our league. Whether, you know, guys, you look at Oklahoma. Look up Oklahoma's lifetime record against SEC teams. It's almost 2-1. I mean, Oklahoma's never been scared of the SEC. And Texas is, you know, Texas beat Alabama last year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, both these guys are coming into the league feeling like, you know, they're going to do well. And I think they will.
To me, the biggest, I mean, that is the biggest story. But maybe 1A is we're moving into a non-Saban era. And this is something, I mean, yes, we
You're
know
right.
it, but we have forgotten what a non-Saban SEC football season feels like. We will not have divisions. I mean, there is a lot more to it than just Oklahoma and Texas are joining the league. I think this is a, you know, a major sea change for this league and for college football.
I think it's going to be harder to get noticed than perhaps it was before. I think it's one of the things, it's not a major byproduct of the lack of divisions, but man, you when there's 16 teams
mm-hmm.
and you got a bunch of marquee programs out there, and I'd like to think we're one of them, but right now we're really not. When you're in a 16-team league and you got a bunch of teams out there that are commanding the national spotlight, you can get lost in the shuffle real fast. And so I wonder how that's going to play for some of the programs in our league.
See, you bring that up, the lack of Saban. To me, it's smart in Georgia's league for the next 10 years unless someone gets in their way. I mean, because the only thing that was standing in Kirby Smart's way was Nick Saban. Beat him in the national championship in 2018, beat him a couple years after that. Now he doesn't seem to have any obstacle, per se, that could prevent him from dominating the next 10 years. And maybe there's an unforeseen circumstance that I'm not looking
at. Seven or eight other schools like to have something to say about that.
Well, people did not envision Georgia being what they are now, Ty, 10 years ago. And,
very true.
Someone can certainly emerge. And let me say this also. Nick Saban's not the only coach that's won a national championship at Alabama. There will be, perhaps, a drop-off. It would seem like there would be, and I think there will be to a certain extent. But I've watched Alabama football a long time, and every time they've been down, they've come back up. And so there might be a temporary blip on the radar, but it won't last.
Well, and you'll have a decade or more of the Nick Saban coaching tree having its effect on the league and the game. That tree is no longer budding. It's no longer producing, but – there's still plenty out there. And, you know, Kirby Smart's a prime example, number one, of that coaching tree. So his effect will still be felt in some ways on the game.
Biggest game in the league is November the 9th when Georgia travels to Oxford. Ole Miss has never won an SEC championship. Lane Kiffin had the best offseason of any coach in college football. I don't think Jackson Dart's the quarterback that can take him over the top, but that's two disciples that you're talking about.
You're pulling for Ole Miss in that game, aren't you, Ty?
You know, to be honest,
Kiffin's your guy.
I would like to see, because to
he's
me,
not his guy, is his bro.
Yeah,
that's his bro.
Yeah, I'm sorry, bro. I'm sorry. He's your bro. He's bro coach.
Yeah,
I just
coach bro.
Coach bro.
My stance on this, on that, is if Ole Miss can do it.
I know you said it 1,000 times.
But
you said it 1,000 times. That is anytime one team that's perceived to be in the bottom half is not winning, and another team that's perceived to be in the bottom half is winning, everybody's going to say, if they can do it, why can't we do it?
Why not us?
I hear you. And I know you're going to say it again.
Well, did you rewind the tape. Did you just say the biggest game in the league this year is Georgia-Ole Miss?
In Oxford, November the 9th, yeah. I would put that over Alabama and Georgia. I think Georgia goes into Tuscaloosa and beats them by two touchdowns. That's DeBoer is not going to work out.
You make a lot of statements with the knowledge, the full knowledge, that nobody's going to remember. Oh, did you, and that's one of them
Wait. Did you hear what he said yesterday?
He said Georgia's going to go to Alabama and win by at least two touchdowns.
Did you hear what he said yesterday, though?
No, I didn't.
I'll do the show naked if Oklahoma makes it to the SEC championship, Chuck.
They don't have to win it. They just got to get there.
I wouldn't say that about Texas, but I feel that way about the Sooners.
I seldom root for the Sooners, and I'll never root for them now. I don't want to see that.
We all lose if they win.
I don't want to be a part of that.
Are you ready to give your family the best 4th of July experience yet? USA Fireworks wants to make that happen. Go to hitthatline.com/USAFireworks and enter for your chance to win a $1,000 fireworks show. It's $1,000 wholesale fireworks worth more than $2,000 retail. Again, hitthatline.com/USAFireworks. The USA Fireworks banging giveaway, courtesy of USA Fireworks, ESPN Arkansas, and hitthatline.com.
Call or text the McLarty Daniel Hotline at 877-377-6963. McLarty Daniel, a vehicle for every lifestyle.
When you're looking for a new car, you want to shop for a vehicle you love with an organization you trust. You've probably heard that McLarty Daniel means making deals, but what I'm inspired by the most is that McLarty Daniel means making a difference in our community. When you buy a vehicle with McLarty Daniel, you reinvest right here in the community, in our schools, in our little leagues, in our food banks, and our people. So you're not just making a purchase, you're making a difference too. Come see us at any of our 6 locations in Northwest Arkansas.
BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup playoffs this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. And when the game's over, head on over to the online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of their over 150 slot games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use the promo code BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
All right, Father's Day is this Sunday. And Ty and Chuck, since neither one of y'all will, don't have the kids around, what's the worst Father's Day gift you've ever given in your life? That's the Morning Rush Daily Question brought to you by Red River Dodge. Ty, what is the worst Father's Day gift you've ever given Baylor Brad?
I would say nothing. Just not getting him anything.
A bottle of English leather or British sterling.
Yeah.
You know, I can remember giving my dad like a bottle of British sterling or English leather. You know, if you're old enough to remember those brands, you know, they were big, well-marketed brands of cologne. And, I'd go to his place as a kid and I'd open the bathroom cabinet and there were all those full bottles of cologne. And I always wondered why I never used them. And I'd ask him, hey, how come you're not putting on that British sterling I got you? You know, I was a kid. I didn't know any better. Now I understand. So I would say that bad cologne
is
probably the staple of bad Father's Day gifts.
Yeah, just either not remembering or not getting anything. I've got him his already. It's been sent to them. They are actually in Costa Rica for a combination of Father's Day and I guess their anniversaries in
December. So his gift was to get the hell away from you. That was his gift to himself?
Pretty much.
In fact, I'm going to leave the country this year.
I get asked this weekend, it's like, hey, are you going back for Father's Day? Because I've got a lot of friends that live in Northwest Arkansas in the River Valley. It's like, no, my parents are on vacation. They kind of replied the same way.
How does that make you feel?
Normal. I guess.
Like you deserve it?
No, this is a trip that they've been planning for quite some time. They're there a week, so I'm happy. I wasn't going to go. I mean, full disclosure, I wasn't going to go home anyway. I'll call them. I'll pay the whatever it is to do the overseas call or a minute or whatever, and I hope he has a happy Father's Day. Sounds like they've got a
good son.
I wouldn't say that, but I attempt to be a good son from time to time. Here's the thing. You ask about, hey, what's the worst case? My dad is like, he's so lame when it comes to asking gifts. Like, he is, when it comes to being a father, like, he's gotten us a ping pong table. We've had all these cool things that, like, as a kid growing up, you're like, man, I have the best dad in the world. And I still do to this day. But he never asked for anything cool. Like, I try to, like,
pull it. What a dad does.
I try to pull it out of him. And I always have to ask my stepmom, and then it's still lame. Like, even when she pulls it out of it's still, you know what he asked for Father's Day? A pair of, like, Patagonia shorts or Columbia shorts. That's what
What's
he
wrong
wanted.
With that?
Yeah. Of all, but
how's, like, that lame?
I want to get him something because I can actually afford to.
What, you want to buy him a car?
No, but, like, the Kansas City.
Why don't you pay for his trip? Man. Pick up the tab for that trip to Costa Rica.
Be Seinfeld. Buy him a Cadillac. Take it down there to, like, Del Boca Vista.
In one time in my life, I guess since I've graduated school, and I guess I had a year or two where I wasn't making squat, but, like, I can.
That's why dads give you answers like that. They know you can't afford it, so they don't give you an expensive answer. That's what a good dad does.
The Kansas City trip last year, going to Arrowhead, a place he hadn't been in 35 years since he was at Blue Valley High School. Like, that's awesome.
That's a great gift.
He's got this fear in the back of his head, Ty, that he might still have to support you before it's all said and done.
Yeah. Well, he listens to the show. He knows.
That'd be Tommy's fault if he fired me and I wasn't able to find work. But, yes, that probably is a fear, and in some case, hopefully, knock on wood, not a reality down the road. So that is nothing. The answer to the question is nothing.
Probably mine. I think nothing is probably better than, you know, when I couldn't. When I was really, you know, the rubber band was really wound up tight and there wasn't anything to put in the rubber band, just getting a card at, like, Dollar General, you know. At least I didn't forget, but, you know, when you have that stage in life where you don't have two nickels to
rub
together.
I will say this. There is Father's Day, it's still a big deal. My dad was a single dad for 6-7 years. I am, in some cases, the man I am today, for better or for worse. The worst things are because of myself. The better things are because of him, because of my father. But there is a difference between forgetting Mother's Day and forgetting Father's Day.
Oh, big difference.
You will, like, go to hell if you forget Mother's Day. I made sure. And,
well, the Reds will end up with your whites in the laundry, and all your shirts are pink now.
Even as a youngster, when my mom was around, I knew that everything was going to go you know where if I forgot Mother's Day. And again, not that Father's Day is insignificant, but Mother's Day to me was always a tier higher. And I think it's a tier higher in most people's thoughts.
More than that.
Oh, more than one tier.
More than one tier. All right, that's your Morning Rush daily question. What was the worst Father's Day gift you've ever given? You can text us that as well. It's brought to you by Red River Dodge in Heber Springs. They are Arkansas's number one Ram dealer. Log on at redriverdodge.com.
Now, let's talk to Tom Murphy on the Morning Rush.
Tom, welcome into the program this morning. We'll start with something Arkansas related. Got the announcement yesterday that the ACC-SEC challenge has been set. Tuesday and Wednesday night, first week of December, Arkansas will go to Miami. So Chuck gets to go to Miami, then he gets to go to New York the following week. Your thoughts on the pairing between the Hurricanes and the Razorbacks?
Yeah, good morning, guys. I like it. Hey, you get to go to a warm weather place. The fans, if they want, can go down and during the cold time and warm up. And, you know, you get to face Jim Larranaga, who in his own way is kind of, you know, a very interesting coach, still going at age 74, had Miami in the Final Four year before last. So I think it's a good thing. It's two rosters that are basically overhauled. I mean, how many other schools in Division I can you say that about, that it's almost a complete overhaul of the roster? So it's not like one team will have a significant experience advantage over the other, but certainly the Canes will have a home court advantage. But I suspect by then the Razorbacks will have a pretty good feel for their own identity, and I expect a good game.
And, like, last year, Miami, I think, went 6-14 in conference, very similar record to the Arkansas Razorbacks. I'm thinking the pairing might have something to do with that. But you mentioned something important. Not only does Arkansas have a complete overhaul of its roster, Trevin the only returner, but Miami lost a lot of guys to the portal, too. So maybe that is an advantage. One of the things I wanted to ask was, like, Is it maybe better in hindsight that you're not going to Cameron Indoor against Duke, who's probably going to be the better team considering your upcoming SEC schedule, MSG, and maybe another team or two? I mean, you don't want to just go all in year one when you don't know what it's going to look like, right?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, just in terms of difficulty level. Now, hey, it would be a high-profile game. The game day crew might be there profiling John Calipari and how the first season is going with the Razorbacks and all that. But winning the game, you know, Jay Billis might be there and so on. But winning the game takes on another level of difficulty. And so I guess Auburn gets that challenge. I think I saw that yesterday. And I do really believe the conferences try to match schools that are in equal, like, you know, highest profile, equal roster situations or returning experience or how they performed last year type situations.
All right. Tom Murphy with us on the McLarty-Daniel Hotline. Let's change lanes and talk football. Times came out for the schedule we already had, or at least time windows. What were your thoughts on this initial attempt to give fans and schools and you know, working with the networks to get at least earlier notice now what time or part of the day football games are going to be played in throughout the season?
Well, my initial thought is I love it because fans can now determine, you know, what their hotel nights will look like months in advance. And for our sake, like when we go to games at Mississippi State, if it's a morning kickoff, as this one will be, we could stay Friday night down that way toward Tupelo, but then after the game, come a lot farther back home. And so now we know that. And I just think it's a great advancement. Look, CBS, I talk to folks who love the production quality of CBS and say it might not ever be matched. And there's that certain feel you get when you hear the opening music to CBS Sports, and I think we'll miss the production quality and that kind of the window, the pomp and circumstance that went with that game. But being able to select it 12 days out and sometimes 6 days out did add a layer of difficulty to the fan planning. So just in terms of what it means to be able to lay out what your schedule, you know, what kind of parties you might have and all that kind of stuff, it's good for the fan experience.
September 7th on the road at Oklahoma State, 11 a.m. game. That's going to be on ABC. September 21st at Auburn. That's after the UAB game at home. That's going to be an afternoon or early evening game, one of those flex games. Those two games, to me, Tom, I've got kind of asterisked or starred because I'm of the belief those are wildly important to Sam Pittman, his future, and the direction of this program. Am I overstating or have I overthought my opinion how large those two games are and maybe what it means to the balance of the season winning at least one of those two games?
Yeah, I am largely in agreement with you there just because they're the significance of, you know, first Power Five, you know, or first Power Five game, first road game, the Oklahoma State one. And then, you know, conference opener at Auburn. You know, they did that in 2014, and it didn't go well for them, although they were tied at halftime, I believe, before the elevators getting stuck situation occurred. But, yeah, I mean, I think those two and then A&M early in the season. I like Arkansas' schedule on the whole. You know, the open dates before LSU and Texas, the array of home versus road games and how they're spaced out. Last year's was just really, really tough. They've had some, in addition to playing number one teams a whole lot and just having like the toughest schedule in college football so often in the last decade, this schedule is a much more like manageable. But those games are early in the season and they're road games. Oklahoma State on the road, the A&M game Auburn game on the road, and then A&M that follows is neutral site. So none of those three really key games are in Fayetteville, and that's so the Razorbacks have to find a way this season to get their mojo going early.
Yeah, you avoid Alabama and Georgia. Alabama being a division competitor since I guess 92, and Georgia you've had to play last few years, not last year, but it's just nice that you don't have to go to Athens or Tuscaloosa. In terms of as we're talking with Tom Murphy here on the McLarty-Daniel Hotline, Tom, what about other SEC games like Alabama's hosting Georgia? You've got Oklahoma and Texas, of course. Maybe there's a game that you've looked at that you say, this is a game I'm absolutely going to watch when I get done covering the team. Is it one maybe you've circled on the calendar?
Well, clearly those two you mentioned, But the way that the conference is stacked up now, I think, doesn't Georgia play at Texas? I mean, that's going to be a huge one. Or maybe you just mentioned that. But the way the conference stacks up now, I mean, really, almost on a weekly basis, you're going to see games that really matter, or games that are meaningful to you, that have interesting coaching connections or player transferred to another school connection. Much like when Arkansas plays Ole Miss this year with Poupal on the other sideline. So I haven't gone through it thoroughly with a fine-tooth comb to figure out which games I think are the most meaningful, but I kind of go with the flow. I like riding in the ocean. And, this coming week, this game's happening. I will definitely try to tune in for that or record it while I'm out covering the Razorbacks.
You mentioned a former player, Chris Poupal, in Oxford. It's a bummer. A.J. Green looks like he's going to be out for the majority of the season for the Oklahoma State Cowboys. Hate that for him as a former Razorback. Tom, staying within the framework of college football, Mike Leach, not going to be entering the Hall of Fame, the late Mike Leach. He's like a .596 overall winning percentage in college football. Should they have changed the parameters for one of the architects of the spread offense and what he had impact-wise in college football?
This could turn into a passion project for someone, and I read Dennis Dodd, who wrote a very good article about this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you change the parameters. I think you just grant the waiver to it. Look, two historically black coaches have been put in since. So if you read the Dennis Dodd story, Steve Hatchell was installed as the chairman of the National Football Foundation in like 05 or 06, somewhere in there. And he was told by powerful members of the committee, you know, look, we're not going to waver from the 600 winning percentage. This is hard fast. Well, since then, two historically black coaches have gotten in with, less than that winning percentage. And also, there's a guy who was in now before Steve Hatchell, who had a losing record. And it was based on longevity and stuff like that. But college football itself would be short-sighted and hurting itself if someone who's got Mike Leach's innovative, the brand, is not in the Hall of Fame. I mean, you could almost do an entire wing devoted to him. The air raid offense and his disciples are all over college football now, and some of the principles of it are in the pro game. That's how important and meaningful he was. And look, Hal Mumme was part of that and all that. But Mike Leach is the one, and then just his personality alone. So I think it would be very short sighted and wrong if there wasn't a waiver granted. Now, look, I think he should serve the 3-year waiting period like his standard before he goes in. But I think he deserves a spot, and I think they'd be hurting themselves if he doesn't get a spot.
All right, Tom, before we go, real quick, your thoughts on the passing of Jerry West. And, you know, we're talking about Leach and an innovator and architect of maybe modern offense. Jerry West, far greater than that on his impact in the game of basketball.
No doubt. Obviously, the logo and just more of a low key guy. I mean, he stayed out of the spotlight for the large degree. And I actually turned on the TV yesterday morning and was watching, and there was a big thing about some of his highlights and times they were in the NBA Finals. And I didn't realize he had passed yet because sometimes you just catch an interesting deal like that. And I was absorbed by it. And then they go at the end of it, and we regret Jerry West passing. I don't remember him, as a kid watching him play very much, but those Lakers teams with him were really, really good. And then when you watch the thing like I watched, you understand his impact. He was voted the finals MVP on a losing team once. So that's how good he was, and obviously he had a big deal in putting together the Showtime Lakers that were so dominant.
Tom, enjoy your weekend and your Father's Day, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Same to you. See ya.
All right, Tom Murphy with us on the McLarty Daniel Hotline. Chuck, let's circle back to the question that Ty asked Tom there about Mike Leach. He's just under the threshold of a 600 winning percentage. Should his innovation to offense and his contributions as maybe one of the modern architects of offensive football in the sport grant him a waiver, an exception to get in posthumously?
I believe so, yes. I don't like a lot of the written standards for Halls of Fame. I think that too oftentimes you become a slave to those numbers, and you no longer are able to look at the big picture. I think the baseball writers have done that. I think this is happening now with the College Football Hall of Fame committee. You can't just say, well, he didn't hit this number, so he's not worthy of the Hall of Fame. I don't agree with that. Look, Mike Leach was a great coach. He was an innovative coach. His effect on college football is all over the game. Now, was he a championship coach? Well, no. Were there flaws in his football teams, particularly on the other side of the ball, because at times of his innovation on the offensive side? Well, the answer to that, yes. Were you afraid when you played a Mike Leach team that you might not score 10 points that day? Well, of course not. But when you weigh his overall contributions to college football, you have to include him. And I would say that whether he died tragically or whether they'd gone 4-8 last year at Mississippi State. I think that his contributions to the game make him worthy of the College Football Hall. So, yeah, I would say that you grant the waiver. Personally, I think you should change the rules. I think you should throw all that stuff out the window. If you know the game, if you're worthy of being a steward of the game by being placed on a Hall of Fame committee, you shouldn't be bound by a number. You ought to have a better feel for the game than to be bound by a number. And if you're strictly bound by that number, in my judgment, you don't belong on the Hall of Fame committee in the first place. So you ask and I answer. How about that?
Listen, this doesn't happen often. Chuck, I 100% agree with you. 100%.
Well, by God, I know I'm wrong.
Yeah. The standard should be, can you tell the story of the game without this person's contribution?
No. He's got 158 careers. Lincoln Riley, Sonny
Dyke. You can't tell it as well. You could tell the story of college football without mentioning Mike Leach, but you couldn't tell it as well.
You couldn't tell the reality of today and the way the offense, and you think about the numbers that a lot of the players that are going into different halls of fame because of football, because of the innovation. Now, that's not to say someone else wouldn't have come up with, you know, the spread offense and the way that he innovated the passing game. Someone else would have come along and took that risk. And Chuck, that's the thing. He took a risk in a game when, everybody was between the tackles and 3 yards in a cloud of dust was the cliche.
Yeah, but we still beat him in Little Rock when he was calling plays for Kentucky and David Barrett picked that pass off and went down the sidelines and Arkansas won that football game.
Loudest place he said he's ever played, War Memorial Stadium. I want to add one more thing to not just this Hall of Fame conversation, but any for that matter. I think it's one of the cruxes of the issue is you've got, in certain cases, nerds that have never played a down of football, that have never played a second on the hardwood, never played an inning of baseball, that now feel empowered that they have really not life-altering decisions, but really, really impactful decisions that affect someone's career. And in some cases, they do right by certain people. In others, they don't. I think they made a mistake in this situation. Again, he's 596. It's a 600 threshold. 596. Round up and throw him in there. Give him the waiver. Everyone.
Well, so it sounds though, if it's 551, do you round that up?
Well, it depends on who it is. Well, but it's 596.
Well, that's why you do what Chuck says. You get rid of these thresholds and numbers, and you evaluate the body of their work.
And if you're not equipped to evaluate the body of someone's work, then you ought not to be on a Hall of Fame committee.
And it shouldn't be a popularity contest.
You shouldn't be there.
And it shouldn't turn into a popularity contest. Hey, we like this guy. He's going in. This guy was really great, but he was a jerk to everybody, so we're not putting him in. That's what you don't want Halls of Fame to turn into is a popularity contest.
That's what the baseball. That's what the baseball.
Pete Rose, Curt Schilling, just keep going down the list. Yeah. There are guys that earned it on the field. And on the diamond and at the batter's box that will never be entered because if they were, quote unquote, you know what's to media members. Yeah. Give me a break.
I think we all agree.
That's not why Pete Rose was banned, but that's a different story.
Yeah, that's a whole other
open up that can of
2 hours of conversation.
Hey,
Hey, sports fans, don't let plumbing issues throw you off your game. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric is here to tackle those pesky drain blockages and ensure your water heater is always in MVP form. With Pascal's world-class service, you can count on a winning play every time. Whether it's a quick drain clear or a water heater touchdown, Pascal's got the expertise to keep your home running smoothly. Stay in the game and leave the plumbing to the pros. Schedule your service online anytime at gopascal.com. Pascal Air Plumbing and Electric.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light, proud sponsor of Arkansas Athletics.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed in Big C's Dallas Mavericks as they lose Game 3 last night. First, we've talked about this program. Big C, you hadn't said anything this morning. I'm assuming it's based on what happened last night.
I'm beat.
Yeah, I understand. Gafford, though, still showed some grit.
There's some Gafford grit right there on the follow.
Gafford grit. Maybe we coined that phrase. Maybe we make a t-shirt out of it. As they fall 106-99 to the Dallas Mavericks. Luka fouled out late, and after that, it was pretty much curtains. What's amazing to me is Jason Tatum has played bad in this series in three games. And that just shows the depth that you've been kind of talking about with Boston that has overwhelmed Dallas. Kyrie, I guess, had a little better game last night. Just wasn't enough as Boston takes a 3-0 lead. No team in NBA history has come back from a 3-0 deficit. I don't think it's going to change this year, fellas.
You know, when you fight from 20-plus down to get yourself in position, then your star player commits some stupid fouls and fouls himself out late. That, you know, that's inexcusable. That's got to be talked about. Luka Doncic, I thought, let his team down when they were on the brink of maybe getting out of there with a win last night. There's 4 minutes to go. Who knows what happens with him in versus out? But with him gone, you had no chance of winning.
He cries more than Danny Ainge, Chuck. And I never thought I'd say that about a male player. But he cries to officials.
Luka's got to get in shape. Luka's got to get in shape if the Mavericks are going to take the next step. He's a great player. He is a great player. He does things with a basketball you just don't see guys do. Particularly guys that look like that. But he's got to do something about his body if he's going to be an NBA champion. He's got too much to lug around out there. He's good enough with the way he's working it now to get as far as he's gotten. But they're not going to win a championship unless Luka becomes a better player. He's a great player now. I'm not saying that he's not. He's one of the best in the game right now.
Mm-hmm.
But if he would fix his body, he could be an NBA champion. He could be like Joker.
Yeah, he's such a hole on defense, too. When that body aspect you were talking about is a big part. Daniel had a good game and finished 3-3, three rebounds, an assist, and also a block, too. Just wasn't enough as, again, Dallas falls in game number three. More accolades for Hagan Smith. He's been named the perfect game pitcher of the year. Gabe Gackle was also named an All-American relief pitcher. Gabe's going to join us in about 10 minutes. Excited to talk with him at the top of hour number three about what he's doing. Team USA, he's trying to make that squad and just kind of what his offseason looks like moving forward. But, guys, these All-American lists, these accolades keep rolling in for Hagan Smith. Still hopes he wins the pitcher of the year. I'm forgetting the one we talked about earlier this week. But they just keep on coming for the, I would guess, eventual first-round draft pick.
Sure, and he's going to win more. There will be more awards out there. And Gackle's the one that I think he may be the Friday night guy next year. This guy, I think, is going to be I guess he was a freshman All-America this year. I think he's going to be just a regular old All-American by the time it's over with. I think he's really good.
We've talked about this morning Jerry West going all the way from Morgantown, West Virginia, to Los Angeles, California. That's quite a difference. Gabe's an Aptos, California kid that came to Arkansas. And I know that Dominique Fletcher is one of those Cali kids that's come here. But there's not, I mean, there's some, but it is an adjustment, I would think. We're gonna ask him about that when he joins us coming up in about 10 minutes. One of the guys that you're excited about from Arkansas in this upcoming recruiting class is Braylon Russell. He's been named a top 100 impact true freshman by 24/7 Sports. He's a big kid, Chuck, and I know that the running back room lost a little bit when Isaiah Gustav elected to go to the transfer portal. You still got Jaquindon Jackson. You've still got Rashad DeBinion. I guess they added Rodney Hill, the Florida State kid. But I'm curious to see if he gets any attention, not just attention, but playing time this upcoming season.
Oh, Braylon's going to play. Yeah, Braylon's going to play. They like him. He's a good player. Has a chance to be a great player. Now, Jaquindon Jackson's the number one tailback.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's a reason for that. And Rashad DeBinion's played there. We're going to see Rashad DeBinion too. But I do think there will be situations. The question that I had for them in the spring was, can you give him the ball between the 20s? Is he a guy that's going to be a goal line guy? If you remember when Petrino was here before, you remember Cody Walker when he was a freshman, and then he ended up playing for Bielema. He scored 5 or 6 touchdowns as a freshman, but they only played him when it was inside the 5. So I wanted to know if Russell could – if you could give him the ball between the 20s. And they say yes, that's the plan. That now, I do think we're going to see him in some goal line. But apparently they feel like they can give him the ball anywhere on the field in any situation. So he's a keeper. I don't know how much he's going to factor in ahead of the older guys this year. Time will tell that, and they'll decide on the practice field. And by they, I mean the players. But he's going to play. I'm certain of that.
And the last thing I want to get to in your Hog Update, Arkansas taking on Miami in the ACC-SEC Challenge. That is Tuesday, December the 3rd. So you've got that game, and then you follow it up with Arkansas and Michigan in Madison Square Garden. I would guess that more Arkansas fans would be opt to go to New York. I could be wrong about that. If they're going to make kind of like a Christmas trip and Christmas decision. I
mean, the weather in Miami isn't bad in December.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. But I think like the Rockefeller Tree, if you had to pick one, I would say New York is the better bet. Mm. And you're playing in MSG, which is...
Well, the thing you have to remember, too, this is not a Saturday football game. This is a Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. And there are some realities that come into play there. You know, I think Miami's I think that's a good game. I know people were hoping maybe for a rematch with Duke, but... Hey, Miami's been to the Final Four since we have, and Kentucky, too, for that matter. So I think it's going to be a good game. I'm looking forward to it.
And I kind of said this with Tom. The more I thought about it, listen, I was just hacked off. I was listening to halftime when Phil and Clay were talking about it yesterday. I wanted Duke and Cameron. But then I looked at Arkansas's schedule that's already been released. You go to Knoxville. You go to Auburn. You're playing Michigan in MSG, who's going to be better, I think, under Dusty May.
When will they make that official, by the way?
I don't know 100%. Yeah. But that is, the more I was like, I don't know if you want another insane marquee. Plus, they haven't scheduled the Dallas game Cal talked about and whoever they play in Little Rock. So something to keep an eye on.
That's coming.
Yeah. And that is your Hog Update this morning, brought to you by our friends at Mr. Sparky.
You don't have to put up with any malarkey. Call 888-8-SPARKY.
Well, it's not often we get to cover live sporting events during the show, but the U.S. Open is underway this morning at Pinehurst. Logan McAllister and Ludvig Åberg, that young player that everyone's keeping an eye on. That
couple of household names.
Yeah, exactly.
There.
They're both 200 par. I will scroll down not very far, and I'll find you one Tiger Woods, who's tied for third. It's very early. He's 1 under par through 4 holes, but... out to an early start, and the U.S. Open is underway.
Give me Colin Prater, the science teacher that qualified and is getting to play this weekend. Over 9,000 people tried to get in, and he is the guy. His caddy is a math teacher, Michael Greller. So give me that team to win the whole thing this weekend.
I'll take that action.
Yeah. I think you would.
How much you want to bet him?
Yeah.
Not a lot. Maybe a nickel. But that is I thought that was a cool story that's happening in Pinehurst this weekend. All right, hour number 3 coming up. Like I said, the All-American freshman, Gabe Gackel, joins us. We'll talk baseball, what he's got going on with Team USA coming up, and more on the other side.
Hi, everybody. This is Chris George from Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Christmas gifts, weddings, heirloom family treasures. And at Joshua's Fine Jewelry, we only have one sale every year, and it's right now. Every single item in our store is value priced for Christmas. We do custom one-of-a-kind jewelry. If that's what you're looking for, come see us. You can get anything fixed for a Christmas gift. Selection, quality, service, and Christmas red tag prices now through Christmas at Joshua's Fine Jewelry in beautiful downtown Russellville.
Have you tried Benville Brewing's new Space Goose Hazy India Pale Ale? It's handcrafted in Arkansas. You'll taste the great tropical citrus, including the passion fruit, the guava, and pineapple. It's creamy, zingy, and zows the taste buds. It's weird, wonderful, and wacky all at the same time. Try the new Space Goose Hazy India Pale Ale from Benville Brewing.
Gabriel, appreciate you joining us this morning. I know you got a busy next couple of weeks training to make this Team USA roster. You guys have the inter-squad series coming up on the 26th and 27th in Cary, North Carolina, a chance to make that roster, play Chinese Taipei, and actually then play in Fayetteville, North Carolina. You have the unique experience of a teammate of yours, Hagan Smith, playing on Team USA. Have you gotten a chance to talk with him about maybe that experience and how that made him a better pitcher?
Yeah, I was talking to Hagan about it a little bit, and he was just saying enjoy it. He said it's a cool experience, and you know, you're playing with a lot of good players from other schools. So he was just saying enjoy it and have fun, and you know, he said it's going to be one of the better baseball experiences I'm going to have.
Yeah. Did you grow up thinking? I mean, was this one of the goals that? When did this kind of goal become a reality? Maybe that's a better way to face it, or to ask the phrase the question. When did you first start thinking about the opportunity to play on a team and represent your country? And has that reality truly sunk in with you yet?
Yeah, I mean, it was always a goal of mine since I got into high school. Growing up, I never really thought about it. But as I was playing high school and doing all the travel ball stuff, I always thought how cool it would be to represent our country. And so I did a little bit of a USA event my junior summer, and I ended up getting cut from the USA team. But, yeah, it's always been a goal of mine to represent the country just because it's a, you know, a special opportunity.
How motivating is that now, Gabe? I mean, you kind of saw where you were in the pecking order then. You've had a great freshman season. How motivated are you to make this team after what happened a couple years ago?
I'm pretty motivated. I mean, it's always in the back of your head, like, you didn't make the team when you were younger, and it's kind of just like it's motivation. I mean, you just want to prove everyone wrong and kind of show why you deserve to be on the team. So I'm going to go out there and just, you know, compete, and hopefully it turns out well.
Gabe, how does a kid from Aptos, California wind up in Fayetteville, Arkansas? I know that Dave's recruited a Cali kid or two, but how'd you wind up in Fayetteville?
Well, Coach Haas is from the West Coast, and so that helped a little bit. And he actually saw me playing out there when I was, I think, in seventh or eighth grade. And he didn't recruit me when I was that young, but that's when I first met him. And then I ended up getting surgery and stuff. And then my junior fall, I was playing at an event where Coach Hobbs saw me, and I got recruited by them a little bit after that and took a visit here. Ended up committing to a different school my junior year, but then I realized I wanted to be in the SEC, and Arkansas was the only other spot I wanted to be. So once I decommitted, I got back in contact with Coach Hobbs, and ended up working out. But it was a big step. And Ryder Helfrich is on the team, is a good buddy of mine from California too, and he was always trying to get me to come here. And so there's a lot of factors going into it, but couldn't be happier with the decision.
Gabe Gackle with us here on the McLarty Daniel Hotline, Razorback pitcher. A lot of disappointment with the way the season ended, but the Razorbacks had such a tremendous regular season. Take us inside that locker room as that regional ended, and what was that interaction like, and seeing some of your teammates that you may not ever be in a locker room with again. Take us kind of behind the scenes in the kind of the closing minutes there of the regular season, in the postseason.
It was super sad. There's a lot of older guys on the team, and for some of them that was the last baseball game they're ever going to play in. So for me, just looking at it, I felt bad for the older guys that were wrapping up their careers. And we had the goal of Omaha, and we started fall ball, and to fall short of that, it definitely hurt a little bit just because we put all the work in, and it just didn't turn out the way we wanted. But, baseball is a hard sport, and the postseason gets a little wild. So, we were pretty frustrated about it for a while now, but I think we're starting to move on, and we'll start building for next year.
Gabe Gackle with us here on the McCarty Daniel Hotline. Gabe, you mentioned kind of your familiarity with Ryder Helfrich, a big reason why you ended up here, kind of like Matt Hobbs. But also, it's nice to kind of have Christian Fouch there going through this USA process with you, your current teammate here in Fayetteville. How kind of reassuring is it that, I mean, you're going probably as east as you've ever been, to have someone that you kind of know and maybe another baseball guy or two that you played high school with too?
Yeah, it's going to be great. You know, me and Christian are going to be having the same plan as of like throwing and lifting. And so it's going to be good knowing that I got another teammate there that I'm going to be able to do it with. And, you know, I'm sure it'd be fine if I went alone, but it's always nice having a familiar face that, I'm comfortable. But yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be fun doing that event with Christian, and hopefully it goes well for both of us.
Gabe, you had a really good freshman season. You led the team in saves. You're an All-American by several different publications, and now you're going to transition to your sophomore year. What kind of role have maybe Dave Van Horn, Matt Hobbs mentioned to you? I know some of our listeners think it's the Friday night guy. Have you had a conversation with them about that just yet?
A little bit, yeah. We've mentioned starting, and I think we're going to test it out, but I'm not exactly sure. It's so far away from the season, but, you know, I'd be excited to whatever role they want me to be in. It's an awesome place to play, and you don't care too much about the role you're in. You just want to pitch at Arkansas just because the environment is so special. So we'll see what happens, but I'm excited for the next year.
Gabe, you mentioned that environment. I would guess it would be pretty alarming or just like, what is this when you walk into Bomb Walker for the first time and you got 10,000 plus fans for a college baseball game? I know that there's plenty of MLB teams in California and out west, but kind of what was your first experience? What do you remember about the first day or night that you pitched in Bomb Walker Stadium?
Yeah, it was amazing. I remember in the fall we had a scrimmage, and it was just a fall scrimmage, and quite a bit of people showed up, so that was pretty eye-opening. And then our first series was against JMU, and that's when I kind of realized how loyal all the fans were, is because it was about 35 degrees, and it was still pretty jam-packed for the first opening series. So once that happened, I kind of knew they were going to show up through the thick and thin, and so it was awesome just to see how much support we had from the fans, and being able to pitch in front of that environment all year was one of the best experiences of my life.
Gabe, walk us through the kind of the rest of your summer. Everybody talks about everything's become year-round anymore, but I just think about, you completed the season that began in February. You'll be with Team USA in the summer, then back at it, and the fall work that goes on with the Razorbacks. Kind of walk us through the rest of your summer, what it looks like, and kind of give our audience a glimpse of how tight the schedule is for a player at your level right now. Is you got, you know, well, it seems like a few weeks, and then you're back here in August for fall ball that starts in September.
Yeah, I'm in Fayetteville till June 25th, and I'm just lifting with the strength coach and throwing some bullpens and live at bats just to get prepared for Team USA. And then Team USA is from June 25th to July 5th, and then I'll come back to Arkansas after that and do. I'll be here for one more week just lifting with the strength coach. I probably won't be throwing at that point, but I'll just be lifting. And then I'm going home for from July 13th to August 1st, and I'm just going to continue lifting back home and, you know, see my family and everything for a little bit, and then I'll be back in Fayetteville August 1st, and that's when we'll really start going with the strength coach, and, yeah, fall ball's right around the corner at that point.
In fall ball, I mean, it doesn't get the attention, obviously, the regular season does. It's in the middle of football. But how important is that as a team and as a player for everything start when that's the beginning of it all coming together and kind of formulating the roster? How important that is that in the process of what happens in the regular season?
For a pitcher, I felt like it was very important. Just for me, it was throwing to all the catchers in fall and getting familiar with them. So, you know, I kind of knew how they worked and they knew how I worked going into the spring. And then it was also just a test to see who could compete at the level. Like, I remember when I came in, I was having a little trouble in the fall, and it was my first time facing college batters. So It was a little eye-opening. It's just a little testing point for a lot of players, and it's just getting ready for the season for the older guys. But, fall ball's great, and it's very important to get going before the spring.
Gabe, we'll leave it there. You, Christian, have a chance to be the 23rd and 24th guys from Arkansas to be on the Team USA roster. We hope you the best of luck, and we appreciate you joining us this morning.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That, again, is Gabe Gackle joining us here on the McLarty Daniel Hotline, guy that had a great freshman season. Guy, I'm going to be honest, I didn't know who Gabe was before the season, and then he came into his own several times, had great appearances, and Chuck really became the guy that they relied on Friday nights to take it and end what Hagan Smith did at first.
Yeah, I mean, he was a California kid, so a lot of our fans probably didn't know a lot about him until, you know, they saw him pitch here. You know, it's interesting as you look at Gackle and some of the other kids, and, you know, you made a point about how, you know, he's from California. Arkansas has always recruited California. You know, Norm did it. Had some really good players from California. Dave's done it a lot. You know, I think back all the way back to Andy Skeels back in the 80s. And, you know, David Walling's name came up a lot when Smith was chasing the strikeout records. Walling's from California. James McCann was from California. The difference now, though, I think, is you're getting the very best players out of California to come to SEC schools. All the SEC schools have always recruited California, but you had to beat Cal State Fullerton. You had to beat UCLA. You had to beat Stanford to get great players. Well, those programs are, you know, they've fallen off. And so, see, I think Gackle is as good a pitcher as Arkansas has signed in a long time. I think this kid's going to be terrific. I think he was last year. And that's a kid that 5-10 years ago, you got to beat Stanford to get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you've got to beat a top 10 Cal State Fullerton to get. You got to beat a top 10 UCLA team that just is coming off their third straight trip to Omaha. You're not competing against those schools anymore. The SEC almost has become a standalone entity. The ACC to an extent too. You're recruiting against other teams in the league for kids 2,000 miles away. Because they're not going to stay home and play because there's nobody to play for.
Yeah, Oregon and Oregon State were the best two this year. They advanced the furthest. I just wonder with the demise of the Pac-12, the move to the Big Ten for Oregon, you know, what becomes of their baseball program, particularly for Oregon in a league that, you know, baseball isn't a priority of any nature in the Big Ten.
I'm not sure the answer to that question. They both have really good programs. Mm-hmm. Oregon State's had a good program for a while, and Oregon's come on over the last several years, too. It's going to be different for them in the Big Ten. I mean, you know, you think about in college sports, the name Ohio State, there's none bigger. But, you know, you don't talk about their baseball team. I don't even think Wisconsin doesn't even have one. So, it's going to be different for them. I don't know if it's going to be good or bad. My suspicion is they'll still have good programs. But, you know, whether or not it's going to be quite like it's been, I don't know.
Last thing on Gabe before we move on, stay within California to talk about Jerry West. But I thought it was interesting that he mentioned his relationship with Matt Hobbs, who he's known since 7th or 8th grade. Now, he said he couldn't necessarily recruit him back then. But, I mean, when you meet someone in Little League or – early stages, junior high or high school, whatever it may be. I mean, you have a good impact or a good immediate conversation. A lot of times these kids remember that or their parents remember that. And he mentioned Ryder Helfrich, Arkansas catcher, being maybe the bigger reason he ended up in Fayetteville. But knowing Matt Hobbs that long, guys, didn't help hurt either.
Well, most programs, pick your sport, if you really delve into it, there are a lot of relationships like that mm-hmm. that lead to players going to particular schools. There's a tie-in somewhere down the line. If it was as easy as just, you know, going through a database every day, it would probably be a much simpler job. But you've got to build those relationships. And sometimes they just happen, like this one. Sometimes it's just, you know, happenstance. You don't realize when a kid's that age that, you know, you may be after him later on. Maybe sometimes you do, but I don't know that you generally do. Hey, let me pause just for a second and talk about money. This week on the Market Moment podcast, Matt, Lee, and John talk about Apple's big announcement, crude oil prices and their effect on you, and one economist's doom and gloom predictions about how we're headed into the worst recession of our lifetime. You can check all of that out on the latest episode of the Market Moment podcast. Here's the web address, market-moment.com. That's where you go to find out more. And I'll tell you that Mach 1 Financial Group, LLC, is an SEC-registered investment advisor. They're located in Rogers. For full disclosures, visit mach1financial.com/disclosures.
The NBA family mourns the passing of a basketball giant, Jerry West. An NBA cornerstone for over six decades, West was an all-star every year he played and helped the Lakers to the NBA Finals nine times.
The Lakers have done it!
Off the court, West's brilliance continued, serving as the architect of eight championship teams. An NBA champion, he was recognized by the Hall of Fame as a player, contributor, and as a member of the 1960 U.S. Men's Olympic team. Jerry West was also the first player ever recognized as Finals MVP, and his ability to deliver in pressure situations time and time again earned him the appropriate nickname, Mr. Clutch.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the midcourt stripe.
So that was a good tribute from ESPN and Mike Breen on the legend that is Jerry West, who passed away at 86 years old yesterday. I'm going to read Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's words about Jerry West. The reason Jerry West is the logo for the NBA is because he embodied the qualities we admire in our best athletes. Skills as a player, dedication as a teammate, and integrity as a person. He was my coach, my advisor, but mostly he was my friend. Today, a part of the continent has broken off and we are a little smaller. I know I am. And again, it's from the legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was with him early on in the Lakers days. And guys, again, basketball's worse off today after what happened with the passing of Jerry West.
But better off because of him.
It's a good way
so,
to put it.
I mean, he was the logo. He was everything. I mean, he was the NBA to many people in that era. That's an era gone by. You know, Jerry West came out of, you know, West Virginia in, I guess, the late 50s. And into the 60s, really, his heyday. And by the early 70s, you know, he's kind of on his last legs. But he was around the game in some form or fashion, you know, for almost, he died at 86. So, I mean, he's been part of the NBA body for 64 years. Yeah. So, you know, this is a guy that for many people was the NBA.
Yeah, and, you know, you spoke earlier to not, you know, having a few childhood memories of his playing days. Tom Murphy said he doesn't remember those days, but we all know the name. It's a household name with Jerry West, and that speaks to the impact beyond just his playing days that are still, you know, record-setting.
If you are old enough to remember, and I was, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old right at the end, but the logo, you know, the way the basketball player's body is positioned.
The silhouette, yeah.
That was every night. You know, you saw that every, I mean, that is the perfect shot of how Jerry West, you know, how he looked when he dribbled the ball and drove to the basket. He could play now. He could flat out play.
We always,
as Dickie V would say,
in that voice. We always talk about the legendary rivalry between the Lakers and the Celtics. And Oscar and him had a rivalry, but it was a friendship too. But those early years, and you kind of mentioned this earlier, those early 70s battles between the Knicks and the Lakers in the finals. I don't know if it got to the extent of what Boston was, but that was intense back in the day when you had him, Goodrich, Baylor, Chamberlain, Willis Reed, DeBuscher. Those were fun too, Chuck.
Well, the great games, though, were with the Celtics in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry West was 1-8 in the finals. 1-8, you know, and Bill Russell had a lot to do with that.
Yeah, sure did.
This podcast has been presented by Bet Online.
This podcast is an exclusive property of Pearson Broadcasting. It may not be copied, reproduced, modified, published, uploaded, reposted, transmitted, or distributed in any way without Pearson Broadcasting's prior written consent. Subscribe to the Hit That Line Podcast Network, the best podcast in the Natty State. Just search Hit That Line wherever you listen to podcasts.